I don't know that they're here, but I want to welcome Jeremiah Donati, the new athletic director at TCU, and Jeff Long, the new athletic director at University of Kansas. With Jeff's addition, we now have the first 4 years of the college football playoff chairman in our league, and so that is a real asset to us. I think we've got a terrific group of athletic directors, and of course want to congratulate Chris Delconte for his move from TCU to Texas, and he's hit the ground running down there. We also have a couple of staff changes that I think most of you are aware of, but I want to make sure that I identify them and thank them for their work. John Underwood and Drew Hancock, both senior associate commissioners, are retiring, and they are going to continue to stay involved with the Big 12 on a consultative basis, but they are retiring, and one of the positions we absorbed from within, and the other one we hired a gentleman by the name of Jeff Jackson, who is, despite being involved in the sport that has a round ball, he's here for the pointed ball too, and I see Jeff seated out here. Jeff Jackson comes to us from the Big South Conference and will be the coordinator of all things basketball for the conference. This is, as I look back, we were the only team, or the only conference, that had teams in the CFP, the Men's Final Four, the College World Series, and the Women's College World Series. There were a number of other interesting and impactful things that happened during the course of the year. One of the things, and I'm not sure that I've ever heard of this before, but the University of Texas had every one of their teams, every one of the teams they sponsor, make the postseason at one level or another. I don't know that I've ever heard of that. Remarkably, OU had three first-round draft choices, Baker Mayfield and Trey Young and Kyler Murray in baseball. And so that is remarkable for one institution. They've done a great job there. Among the many other highlights that we experienced, UT won their fourth swimming championship on the men's side, and Oklahoma State won their 11th golf championship and also hosted the tournament. And amazingly, four of the final eight teams in that tournament were Big 12 teams. We completed our seventh State of the College Athletics. This forum was on esports, which may or may not end up in the realm of college athletics, but it was certainly an interesting and informative forum. And we've got as I say, that was our seventh one. We've done forums on gender in athletics, race in athletics. We've done forums on student athlete rights and privileges and prerogatives. We've spent a lot of time talking about rules and how they're made and how they're violated. But the forums have been a differentiator for us. And to the extent we can find meaningful topics, we're certainly going to continue that. We also have continued our relationship with Extra Yard for Teachers. The college football playoff identified the teaching profession and education as its philanthropic undertaking, and it's been a remarkable thing for the CFP, but it's also been activated on a local basis by each of the conferences. And last year, we, in the sport of football, we armed 75 of our student athletes with the opportunity to make a $1,000 grant to a teacher that they were able to identify. And in conjunction with the women's basketball tournament, we also recognized 30 teachers in the Oklahoma City area with $1,000 grants under a program that we called My Teacher, My Hero. Just recently, in conjunction with Extra Yard for Teachers, we just did a partnered technology overhaul, a makeover, if you will, of a classroom at St. Philip's Academy. And for those of you that don't follow it, and many of you have no reason to, we have a real crisis in the teaching profession. By 2022, we need another 100,000 qualified teachers in this country. And so we have lots of work to do. It was interesting to see how we arrived at this as our philanthropic undertaking, because as the 10 commissioners sat around the room talking about what kinds of things we might want to consider, probably among the 10 of us, we had 35 connections to teachers. Children teaching, parents teaching, teachers that have made a big difference in somebody's life. And so it's been a real success story. Britton Banowski left Conference USA to go and run the foundation and run this program. And so we feel very excited about it and very pleased at the progress we've made. We've got lots of new initiatives, and I'll run through a few of them right now. Noteworthy among them, tickets for this year's championship game go on sale this Friday, July 20th. They're available on SeatGeek.com. The game will be on ESPN, and of course it's at AT&T Stadium on December 1st. We will also be at AT&T for our championship game for the next 4 years, including this one. We'll be finished in 2021. And while we're discussing AT&T, and while this venue has been an excellent one for us for Media Day, the 19 and 20 Media Days will be at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. The dates of those Media Days are not yet available, but we will get that to you just as soon as we have it. We've also hired a new coordinator of officials. As many of you know, Walt Anderson, our longtime coordinator, accepted a position with the National Football League to work on a full-time basis. And he has been replaced by Greg Burks. Greg was an on-the-field official for us for many years. He went from here to coordinating the officials for the Mountain West Conference, and the Big 12 has had a long relationship with the Mountain West. And so now Greg will come back to us replacing Walt, and he will also continue to have a role in the Mountain West officiating operation. We also would like to announce a partnership that we have developed with the Visus helmet manufacturers. The Visus helmet has been rated number one and number two by all of the rating services. It is a safer helmet. It's one that is a little heavier, and it takes a little getting used to, but we are the first conference-wide partnership with Visus, and they're making a terrific product. Obviously, we care deeply about head trauma and repetitive use, and I think we've got the Visus helmet set up around here someplace. So if you have an interest, you can check with any of our media relations staff, and they'll let you know where that is. But we're very excited about the partnership. We will probably have at least 10 to 15 players at every on every team that are wearing the Visus helmet. We also, as a final housekeeping or notification matter, we will find out this afternoon if Dallas-Fort Worth is successful in getting a men's Final Four. We made the presentation last week, and we expect to know between 3:30 and 4 this afternoon. So any of you that may have an interest in that should stay around. But we're here for football, so let's get to football. You'll see the banners around. Every game matters. You'll hear it a lot during the course of the year. We believe in it. We think the Big 12 path to the end of the season is not only the most challenging, but the most representative of quality. The fact that everybody plays everybody, and the fact that we guarantee 1-2 in the championship game is unlike the way that any other conference conducts their business. Nobody is going to win the Big 12 by who they don't play. It's a difficult path, but I think it's one that will serve us well. Our championship game was an unqualified success last year. We had about 63,000 people that attended, and it was another great Big 12 football game. And so we expect that to continue, and we're excited about having the AT&T Stadium as our home for the championship. And for the record, there's much has been made about the issues pertaining to the guaranteed rematch that we have. On 41 occasions, we've had rematches in the championship game, including 7 of 9 last year. So the regular season rematch is not particularly unusual, and I think we will end up with great games on all occasions, because we're always going to have 1 versus 2. We had a great year in 17. It's over, but we could take just a little bit more time to celebrate it. Personally, I've been at this for 40 years, and I don't know that I ever saw a better football game than the Oklahoma Georgia semifinal game. It was an absolute classic. Either one of those teams could have won the championship, and I think that we have said repeatedly we aspire to national championships. We're going to work hard to win national championships, and our representative in the CFP was certainly good enough. We end up with a lot of individual awards as well. As you know, Baker Mayfield was the Heisman Trophy winner, but he also won the O'Brien, the Maxwell, the Walter Camp, and was the AP Player of the Year. Similarly, Mark Andrews won the Mackey Award. James Washington from Oklahoma State won the Biletnikoff Award, and Michael Dixon won the Ray Guy Award. So we really had a terrific year last year, and including 7 first-team consensus All-Americans. And so we're excited about what we did, what they did, what the kids did, what the coaches did. But to reiterate, we aspire to win national championships, and we'll keep working at it until we do that. Now, having said that, we've got a good place to start. We've got a lot of good football players, but we've also got some of the best coaches in the country. Bill Snyder is entering his 27th year, which is number one for longevity in the United States. Gary Patterson enters his 19th year, and that's number 3 in longevity. And Mike Gundy enters his 14th year, which is 5th in longevity. We've also got a bunch of terrific young coaches and guys that have been around a while and guys that are just getting started with their career. But when you get outstanding coaches and outstanding players, you're going to get great games. And I think we're going to get great games right out of the chute. We will have the number one non-conference schedule in the country. 37% of our games are against Power 5 opponents. That's the highest by quite a distance compared to the rest of the Power 5 and the Group of 5. We were 80% of our teams were in the postseason last year, and we posted a 5-3 record, which is pretty good, especially when you consider we had we've been 65% winning percentage over the last 2 years combined. We've got 7 guaranteed bowl positions this year, and I'm grateful that many of our bowl partners are here today, and thank you to all of them. We also have got all the trophies on display, and so many of our bowl partners are here, and we appreciate the relationship very much and appreciate them making the time to be here. So, in short, we have much to be thankful for, but we also have much to look forward to. And I'm excited about the football season. I think every Saturday in the fall is going to be a real adventure. And with that, I'll be happy to take some of your questions.
If you have a question, if you'll put your hand up, we'll get a microphone to you so you can ask the question. Makes it a lot easier for everybody. Can't see anybody's hand there. We got a question on the third row right up in the middle. Jennifer, come on up about on your right hand side. Keep coming. Kirk, put your hand up so she can see. There you go. Would you please give your name and affiliation when you ask your questions? Thank you.
Kirk Bowles from the Austin American Statesman. Bob, with aspiring for national championships, is there any movement toward expanding the 14 playoff to 6 or 8? I get it out of the way.
I thought you were going to ask the Big 12 expansion question. I still had it on my list as somebody's going to ask me that. Oh, your follow-up, okay. There's always the talk about the shape of the playoff. And frankly, I think it's been pretty good. We've had good matchups. We've had lots of debate about the size of the playoff. There are those who advocate six. There are those that advocate eight. There are plausible arguments to be made for it. And we had three aspirations going into the playoff. We wanted to keep the postseason strong. We wanted to keep October and November as the best regular season in all of sports. And we wanted to strengthen September. And I really feel like we've accomplished all of those things. And so I think we have to be a little bit careful moving away from it. Now, having said that, our league has been in twice and left out twice, and any form of expanded playoff would likely enhance our opportunity to get in. When you have a situation where everybody plays everybody, you're not going to end up with two undefeated teams at the end of the year like you could do in some other leagues. And so we talk about it all the time on a Big 12 basis, and we talk about it frequently at the national level when the 10 commissioners get together. I don't sense any significant movement to move away from four, but I expect that those discussions will be ongoing.
We got a question on the left side. Blair, put your hand up again. Thank you.
Bob, Blair Kirkhoff with the Kansas City Star. About conference expansion now, I wanted to ask if there's been a conference-wide discussion about legalized sports gambling. And what are your general thoughts about that decision?
Yeah, I didn't have that in my notes, largely because I didn't have anything intelligent to say about it. I think we're very much in a wait-and-see environment right now. There's a lot of talk about integrity fees. There's a lot of talk about how it gets managed. Are we really going to end up with 50 states that all have different laws on legalized gambling? There are some of our states that have moved ahead, but most are moving slowly. And the change in PASPA makes sports gambling on college theoretically legal and subject to state jurisdiction. And I think that we're going to have to keep watching. What do we end up with? For instance, if a couple of our states in our Big 12 footprint have legalized gambling and three others don't, what do you end up with if some say, well, you can bet on professional sports, but you can't bet on high school and college sports? It's just taking a while to settle in, and frankly, I don't know how it's going to turn out. I think that we spend time in football and basketball particularly. We have a consulting group that helps us look at when lines move abruptly and when there seems to be an unusual amount of money bet on a particular game. And we do it mostly because we want to make sure that we protect ourselves from point shaving and from officiating issues and things like that. But the mainstream gambling environment, you go to an English Premier League game, there's a betting kiosk right next to the hot dog stand. And it's hard to imagine that we're going to get there with colleges and universities, but there's certainly some enabling legislation out there that would permit a very far afield outcome from what we have experienced in the past. I mean, as near as I can tell, the real losers in the whole thing are organized crime, because if it's legal everywhere, it's hard to imagine why people would place illegal bets and risk that sort of jeopardy. But we're all keeping our ear to the ground, Blair, and that's the best I can answer the question.
We have a question on the aisle, left side, and then we'll go over to the right side.
Randy Peterson, Des Moines Register. Bob, first of
morning,
all,
Randy.
I was saddened about your father.
Oh, thank you very much.
But at what point in our lifetimes will college athletes have the right to market their names and likeness and whatnot?
Well, as you know, we were almost there once before. And I think it's going to be a very active discussion. As we go into the court case this fall, the multi-district litigation case in the Ninth Circuit comes to trial in early September. And that the outcome of that trial could very well be a loosening of restrictions on name, image, and likeness. That was in the judge's ruling once before and got taken out. And so I would be skeptical that it won't be in there again. Whether it would be challenged and overridden like it was the last time, or whether we'd end up all the way up to higher court to get it resolved. I don't think it's going to be over soon, but I think name, image, and likeness is it's at the heart of what's going on with student athlete empowerment. And it, you know, it, you could, I could capably make a case on either side of it. Certainly all of us have some prerogative on our name, image, and likeness. All of us have some prerogative to activate around that. On the other hand, the logistics and the practical aspects of it are pretty difficult to fathom. And so, you know, we aren't going to have to wait very long, because I think the trial in the Ninth Circuit will be over probably by mid-fall.
We got two questions on the aisle about halfway back.
Yeah, about Barry Trammell with the Oklahoman.
Back
to the, playoff. Last year we had two SEC teams make it. In your discussion since then, has there been any talk about changing the four-team format in terms of limiting the number from a conference, or the ways that you select teams, or anything new about staying with the four-team format?
Well, you know, the original arguments in the early stages of this were, do we bring forward the four best conference champions, or do we bring forward the four best teams? And I think to some extent that that discussion is continuing. We had some discussions at the CFP meetings in April about how the committee is going to value conference championships, and what weight should that carry in the portfolio of each of the teams under consideration. And you know, the fact is, we invited 13 honest people to go in a room and pick the best four teams and take into account a lot of criterion that may be weighted differently depending upon whose vantage point you have. And so I don't think that we are in a situation where we want to get too prescriptive on that. This was the first time that we had two teams from the same league, and there were reasons why it happened. There were also plenty of reasons to disagree with the decision. And we've talked with both of the chairs and with committee members and with CFP staff and with commissioners, and you know, I think we probably have a little more clarity on how all that's going to fit together and how the conference championships are weighted. But I think in the end, this is a subjective process, and we can't get too far into prescribing how those 13 people do their jobs.
We have another question in the center, and then we're going to come up to the front.
Hey, Bob. Jenny Carlson with the Oklahoman. Walt was the director of officiating for so many years. Obviously, that's a big change for you guys. But if you could talk a little bit about Greg Burks, what we can expect from him, why he was the right guy for that job to take over.
Well, Greg is a very highly qualified guy. We interviewed, I can't see Ed Stewart right now, but we interviewed, I think, five. And all of them were qualified candidates. Greg has been actually doing the job with the Mountain West. Obviously, he knows the Big 12 inside and out. He was a crew chief, and he was on the field for a lot of years. And I think the fact that we have a relationship with the Southland and the Mountain West also made it an easier transition. But he's a top quality instructor. He's a good evaluator of talent. the replay center that we built last year is really a vital part of this, and Greg will be in the replay center with his staff on all of our games. And so he just really jumped out, and I think will be a great successor to Walt. Having said that, I would be remiss if I didn't give Walt the credit he deserved. Walt is a great teacher of officiating. He's a great identifier and mentor of young officials, and he's brought people up through the ranks, and he did a really good job for us. And I can understand the allure of a full-time position in the NFL, but we sure wish we could have kept him, but we think Greg will not miss a beat.
Got a question on the outside left, and then we're going to come up to the front.
Bob, Chuck Cooperstein from the Big 12 Podcast. You mentioned sort of objective criteria, but you still want, believe it's a subjective argument for playoffs. But one way to perhaps make it a little more objective is for each conference to play the same number of conference games. Obviously, your league plays them all, and there are others that clearly don't and seem to be at a bigger advantage than the Big 12 is. Are you willing to fight that fight to try to get, whether it's 8 or 9 or however many conference games that each Power 5 team will play?
Well, it's a great question, Chuck, and I'm certainly an advocate for all of us playing the same number of conference games. Having said that, we have allowed for some local discretion as to how many games individual conferences play. The long and the short of it is we aren't all going to be the same even if we play the same number of games, because in a league with 14 or 15 members, you're going to, even if you play 9, you're going to have a bunch you don't play. I remember when I was on the basketball committee, you had to look very carefully at certain conferences because they had some one plays, they had some no plays, and they had some two plays. And if you played the better teams once or not at all, obviously it was a huge advantage. You would look at 9-9 in a Big 12 record, and it's very different than 9-9 in some other conference. And so, you know, that's the thing that I think people have to be discriminating on is looking at who you play, when you play them, how many times you play them. And I don't know that any of us are ever going to be in a situation where we can prescribe how many games a league is going to play. We can state our beliefs, as I have, and there's some local discretion on it. But if I'm the benevolent dictator, I'd have everybody playing 9, even though that still doesn't get you on a completely level playing field.
Question in the center front, and then we'll move to the right.
Hi, Suzanne Halliburton, Austin American Statesman. There's been like a building boom across the country as far as construction of stadiums, renovations of stadiums, and all sorts of facilities. Are we reaching the saturation point yet? Do you see that? Is there a bust coming, or is this just going to be a constant state of the way we do business as colleges?
I can answer with my commissioner hat on, or I could answer with my athletic director hat on. We certainly, in the case of the former, we certainly are spending a lot of money on bricks and mortar and on support facilities and on support personnel. The arms race is alive and well. On the other hand, if I put on my AD hat, the only thing worse than being in the arms race is not being in the arms race, because you fall behind and you don't have the tools that you need to get the job done. And so, you know, there's a balance. I always tried to strike it when I was on campus between things that make you better and things that make you more comfortable. And you really ought to invest in those things that make you better, not that just make it easier and more comfortable. You need to do things that help you recruit, help you develop student athletes, help you plan for games and the like. And so, you know, there's no question there's a robust arms race on. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon because, you know, that's not the nature of the competition that we're engaged in. I think you see it in business and other parts of education as well. There's an amazing investment in trying to get ahead and stay ahead.
Got a question on the aisle. Wendell, put your hand up.
Wendell. Wendell Barnhouse, the open man. Getting back to the gambling issue and the cloudy crystal ball, one of the issues obviously is going to have to be resolved is the injury report situation. Is that something that conferences can do individually, or does the NCAA need to come out with some sort of comprehensive thing? And additionally to that, how much of a problem is the HIPAA situation regarding injury reports?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Wendell. Football oversight, which I'm not now on anymore. My 4-year term is over, and so I'm not involved in the most recent discussions on this topic. But the FERPA and HIPAA considerations are substantial. Now, having said that, the ACC has been announcing injury status reports for a while. They don't get into what the specific injuries are, but I think they use a 3-tiered. Questionable, definitely out, and I don't know what the other one is. But so it's not something that you can't do on your own. We haven't chosen to do it because we want to get some answers on relative to student records and the like. But my sense is that there's going to be a hue and cry for that to happen. And I think as long as we don't get too far into the specifics of what the injury is and what kind of medication they may be taking, and what the duration is, and those kinds of things. But some sort of simple system may work, and we've talked about whether or not it gets managed by the conferences or whether it gets managed at a national level, and I think that's unresolved at this point. That actually does give me an opportunity to state, though, however, I really enjoyed my time on the Football Oversight Committee, and Shane Lyons, AD at West Virginia, has been appointed to the Football Oversight, and he will be the chair. So our league will continue to be represented at the highest levels in college football.
Question on the outside left.
Hey, Kellis Robinette here with the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star. You've got some teams in the conference doing this right now, some not, when it comes to alcohol sales at stadiums. What are your thoughts on that? Does the conference have any, input on those things?
The conference really doesn't have a dog in the fight on it. I think the institutions are left to their own discretion on that. And as you know, some have gone forward with it and some have not. It's largely a matter of institutional culture. From a personal standpoint, I do think that it's selling alcohol in the stadium is probably superior to having pass outs at halftime, where everybody goes out and power drinks for the length of the halftime. I think that from a game management standpoint, it's better managed with a controlled environment inside. But reasonable people can disagree on it. It's not something that the conference has weighed in on. But there is an intersection, of course, because if you start to have game management issues or conduct issues, it isn't too much of a leap to think that the conference could be involved in it at some point in time.
Got a question on the aisle right side.
Nick Kruger, Rivals.com. This time last year, we were talking a little bit about the expanded recruiting calendar, and you had even kicked around the idea of maybe pushing an early signing period towards August. But now that we've had the early signing period in December and you've seen the effect of the official visits in the spring and summer this past year, I was wondering if you got any feedback from the coaches or still felt like a earlier signing period was necessary, or how do you feel about how things have played out so far?
Well, we had 70% of the signees signed in December, and that was what we had heard for a while, was that there was that kind of appetite. What we initially heard from student athletes and their parents and high school coaches was that most of the kids, something over 70%, wanted to make their decision by the 1st of October, or had made their decision by the 1st of October. And so the early signing date was a response to that. Coaches were not wildly enthusiastic about it. They also were not wildly enthusiastic about the April, May, and June visits. But student athletes and their parents are pleased with it. And It may change over time. The Football Oversight Committee is looking at the recruiting calendar and how it all fits together. It's been decades since we've had a really full and robust discussion of what the recruiting calendar ought to look like in football, and I think over the next year that'll be a high priority for football oversight. Whether it changes dramatically is yet to be determined.
We have two questions up on the front, one right there and then right ahead of you.
Good morning. Bob Akhiri with Reddit College Football. With the ongoing persistent decline in traditional TV subscribers, how is the Big 12 adapting to the changing market?
Well, we're trying to align ourselves with the best partners that we can, first of all, and in doing that, we acknowledge that technology is changing rapidly. There's no question about it. Mobile consumption is higher all the time. One indication of that is that Nielsen is now, for the first time, keeping track of away from home viewing and mobile consumption. And I think we are in a very good position, we being those that have our content owners, because I think that if you have live content, it really doesn't matter what the platform is. It's going to be valuable, and it's going to be consumable, and people are going to want to have access to it. And whether that is on a digital device that can be on your iPad or be on your television or be on your mobile phone as you're driving around town, or whether it continues on traditional linear cable, I suspect that linear cable is going to continue to decline, but it's never going to go away. It's too big an enterprise, and there are too many people relying upon it. I think mobile will continue to grow, but anybody that tells you they know what it's going to look like 3 years from now is delusional. I mean, they're just nobody that does. And so you try and align yourself with the best thinkers in the space, and try and stay ahead of it. And that's what we're trying to do. As examples of what I said about the decline, I don't think it's going to 10 million subscribers. I think it's going to 60 or 70 million subscribers. But when cable came out, everybody said, oh, well, broadcast TV is dead. It's going to go away. Well, 126 million households have broadcast TV. When TV came out, radio was supposedly dead. There are more radio listeners today than there have been in any time in the past. So, the technology continues to change, but if you have live content and compelling live content, I think you're always going to find a marketplace for your purchase by platforms.
Question on the second row at the front.
Hi, Andrew Miner with 247 Sports.
How are you, Andrew?
Good. I'd like to ask about the state of the Baylor athletic program. There's a bunch of new reports coming out, always, seemingly every day, one of which even said that there's concern at one point about losing membership in the Big 12 Conference. Like, just to ask, one, if that was ever a topic on the table in the past, and what does that membership status look like moving forward in the future? And just two, how does the Big 12 Conference continue to work with the Baylor athletic program on an everyday basis?
Well, there's a lot of questions in that one stretch there. I'm not going to get into talking about the specifics of the Baylor situation. As you know, we are doing a verification process that is not an investigation. It's a verification of the 105 recommendations that Pepper Hamilton put forward. We are still in the process of doing that, and I expect that we'll bring it to a close in the not too distant future. Beyond that, Mac Rhodes has done a terrific job working with us on it. President Livingstone has done an outstanding job of working with our office and with the three-member board subcommittee that is managing the verification. And Matt Rhule is an absolutely as good a football coach as he is, he's an even better human being. And so we are continuing our process, and we'll will issue a report. We've already said publicly that that we will issue a written report, and when we can make more comments on it, we'll do so.
We got a question on the outside right, and up on the on the left, Commissioner of this side. Sorry,
Jason Oak with Stillwater News Press over here, Bob.
Where are you?
Right here.
Okay, sorry. You got me fully confused, Peter, with right and left.
I apologize.
And actually, I was fairly confused on that when I got here, so sorry.
In regard to the replay center, what's been the initial response from it, and are there any numbers? Did it speed up the process, slow down the process, having that in place?
Well, as you know, game time, game duration is a constant concern, and especially in our league because we chuck it around and we throw a lot of passes. And so we are always looking, watching game times and watching times between plays, and we're paying attention on it. At this point, we have not seen replay add a lot to the length of the game. They're mostly looking at the replays at the same time that people in the stadium are looking at the replays, and at the same time that the referee is on the headset. So it hasn't led to an extension, except on a few really tough call situations where you want to try and get it right. And so we need to make games shorter, and we don't want to do things with the rules that are going to elongate the games. But more than that, we want to get it right. And the replay center gives us an opportunity to get it right more frequently. Are we going to be flawless? We aspire to it, but I don't know that we're ever going to achieve it. But as far as adding time to the game, the remote replay has not done that in any sort of significant way. Although situationally, it may add to it on a one game basis or a two game basis. There can be situations where it does, but generally speaking, it's not adding any time to it.
We're going to stay on the same side on the front left.
Art DeLugage with the Atlanta News. Well, vaudeville died, but then there's not anybody here as old as I am who remembers it. It's even too old for me. A basketball question. I know you've taken steps in football and baseball, but the one and done that nobody seems to like, it would seem like if you erase that, these players might go to the Development League or go to Europe. Where does that stand now with the Big 12 and nationally?
Well, it's what you described is exactly what we'd like to see happen. If you aren't interested in a college education, then you should go and pursue your professional dreams on whatever basis you want to. Europe, G League, and if you're good enough, move it right into the NBA. Dr. Rice has had extended conversations with Michelle Roberts and Adam Silver, and made the collegiate position known. I hope that we take the 19-year-old rule away, and that young people will have a legitimate option to go and pursue their professional dreams if that's what they want to do. And those that come to college should plan to pursue their education, and you know, they may leave before they're done, but I think it makes a travesty of higher education to have a young person enroll in school in August and play till March and leave before it isn't even one and done. It's 7 months and done. And so I think that we're headed down the path of resolving one and done, and of course it gets a lot of publicity, but it's a very small number of kids every year that are capable of accessing that.
This is going to be the final question for the commissioner, and we're on the aisle. Where are we? Here we are, about halfway back in the middle.
Bryce Cherry, Waco Trib. Bob, just following up with another question on Baylor. The NCAA is obviously conducting its own investigation into Baylor's response to sexual violence. Do you have a sense of the timetable of that investigation's end and maybe where it's leading, or is that one of those closely guarded secrets?
You're talking about the NCAA investigation? No, I don't have any information on time frame. We're kept informed, but it's mostly after the fact, and that's a separate process, and we'll know what happens when it's at the end.
Okay, Commissioner, thank you very much for your comments. And
thank you all.